Hey guys, I'm Katie.
I'm Rebecca.
And this is Chills,
Thrills,
and Kills.
So, Katie, I haven't spoken to you in over a week.
I know it's wild because we normally talk like every single day.
I mean, not verbally, but yeah, we do text every single day, but we record once a week, and I have missed your voice.
Same. Okay, so it feels good to be back recording.
Truly, I think last Sunday I talked Luke's ear off for like 2 hours. That's usually about half of the time it takes us to record these episodes. So I just would not shut up. And it got to the point where I think he actually left the room.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so look at what you're doing to me.
I'm sorry. Also, this is being recorded on Father's Day, so I just want to say happy late Father's Day, because of course you won't hear it on Father's Day, but to all the dads out there, happy Father's Day.
Yeah, I'm just going to preface that with to all the good dads out there.
Bam, there you go.
Happy Father's Day, because shitty dads don't deserve anything.
Absolutely.
Sorry, not sorry.
Ugh. Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah, originally, I just want to address, so thank you guys for being understanding last week that we did not release an itty bitty. Originally, I had a Father's Day themed one planned, but, you know, some things came up with both Katie and myself, and it's just getting into the studio was not a thing that could happen. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Definitely thanks for understanding. And not only understanding for that, but just all of the continued support in, you know, the Facebook group, just by listening, all of that is so appreciated.
Yeah, we're actually at 1,200 listens, and that is amazing.
Yeah, that is wild.
Yeah, if you had told me when we started this that we would be not even a month in and we already had over 1,000 listens, I would have just laughed in your face.
Same. Definite. Same.
Definitely. But I suppose we should probably just get into the stories.
Okay. So I'm taking the true crime reins today.
Yay. Super excited.
Yeah. So I want to start this episode so you can be as freaked out as I was when I started researching. So I sent you a picture of who I'm covering, and I want you to go ahead and open that so we can all hear your reaction.
Oh, I'm looking at that right now.
Mm-hmm.
I am not prepared. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What? What is he?
I thought he was like a character from Ghostbusters.
I don't even know. He looks like the redneck cousin of Fester Adams.
Mm-hmm, but much bigger.
No, I guess. Like, so if you ever played Left 4 Dead, he looks like the before picture of the boomer zombies.
Oh my God, I didn't even think about that. Oh, that just made it even worse.
Left 4 Dead. Well, and the fact that he's like sticking his tongue out and looks like he's about to just spew bile at you makes it that much more just spot on.
Yeah. So,
well, thank you for that.
You're welcome. So, that's a disgusting specimen is Joe Metheny. So, Metheny.
All right. Starting off with a meth head. Got it.
Yep, man. You're not too far off, by the way. But anyway. Okay, so Mr. Metheny was born on March 2nd, which makes him a Pisces.
Ooh, big fish head.
Yeah, which, ew. Anyway, so.
Nothing against Pisces. It was just the imagery, you guys.
Yeah, anyway. So he was born March 2nd, 1955 in Essex, Maryland. He was born to his mother, Jean Metheny, and his father, which I scoured the internet and could not find his father's name to save my life. So unnamed father is who he will be.
All right.
So he was actually one of six children. None of his siblings are listed either. I did see somewhere that he was like the second oldest. So he wasn't the oldest, wasn't the youngest. He was just kind of there. He was one of six children born to an alcoholic and abusive father, which I guess is why he's unnamed. His father was actually killed when Joe was 6 years old in a car accident, and I'm guessing it was probably his fault since they very heavily relayed the message that he was an alcoholic, so I'm guessing drunk driving probably did him in.
Probably.
Yeah. So that car accident left Jean, which was his mother, to care for all six children on her own, which, oh my God. Yeah. So
I wouldn't even want to care for one child on my own. Like, let's be real here.
Especially, like, back then, I don't know. Good on her. But anyway, she worked as many as five jobs at one time. She was a barmaid. She even dabbled in mechanics. She was a waitress. Basically, anything she could do to make money to support her children, she would do. Which is funny because Joe would go on to tell a sob story about how he was neglected by his mother, and that is what turned him into a quote unquote bad kid.
Oh no, mommy had to work so that I could eat food. I was so neglected.
Yeah.
And not gonna lie though, I'm like almost certain my dad would try and use that excuse because my grandma also had to raise like five kids on her own for a good while.
Yeah.
I mean, until she remarried and he was an asshole, but regardless.
So you'll find that Joe often likes to embellish these little stories, trying to make his life sound a lot worse than it actually was.
As they do.
So he said that his mother neglecting him turned him into a bad kid, but his mother says that Joe was actually a really good kid. He was an above average student. He was very, very easygoing. He helped raise his siblings, didn't really give her too much fuss on anything. He enjoyed riding his bike and playing with all of his friends. So Joe would also tell people about how he was bounced around from foster home to foster home. His mother denies all of these claims, and there's absolutely zero documentation to support any of that.
You know, if you have to make up stories about having to be bounced around from foster home to foster home, your childhood wasn't that bad. Shut the fuck up.
From what I've seen, his childhood was actually pretty good. He never went hungry. He was never homeless. He had toys and bikes, and he was able to go to school. He had clothes. So, I mean, just sit down and shut up. Like, it's really not that serious. But, you know, whatever people can do to put the blame on the fucked up shit they do, you know, whatever.
Yeah, and that's not to say that just because you weren't homeless or you didn't have all of these severe issues that your childhood isn't hard. We're not saying that. We're just mostly commenting on the fact that he's making up bullshit to get sympathy.
Yeah, and the fact that he's making up things that children go through every single day just kind of really, really pissed me off because it's kind of a slap in the face to the people who went through those things as a child and made something of themselves. So it kind of, I started this research off a little annoyed.
Understandable. Yeah. Anyways, let's continue on. Yeah. Rant over.
So in 1973, Metheny joined the army at 18 years old. Here comes another lie. Are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready for it. Let's go.
So he claims to have served in Vietnam, but his mother says no. He did join the army, but he was promptly stationed in Germany away from any kind of warfare that was going on. And from what I found, when he says that he was in Vietnam, American involvement had actually ended in Vietnam at this time.
So, fact check. I mean, I know Google wasn't a thing yet, but history books were.
Yeah, and that's also super annoying to me because how many soldiers were in Vietnam? And you're just trying to group yourself into these
numbers. That actually reminds me of the admin from the Morbid group that like tanked the whole thing.
Oh my gosh.
For those of you that don't listen to Morbid Podcast, there was a group on Facebook and one of the admins pretended that he was a soldier in the military and would basically just go full narcissist on everybody and pissed everyone off, and then the group closed. So yeah. Fuck that guy and fuck people who pretend to be in the military.
Yeah, and not only was he pretending to be in the military, he created this entire backstory based on someone else's life, saying that he was Special Forces, and I come from an extensive military background, so that really lit a fire. But anyway, back
to the Not to mention, though, if you're in these Special Forces and in all of these very covert op situations, you don't brag about them on the internet.
You literally cannot brag about them on the internet.
Yeah. So, again, other rant over. Sorry, guys. Again, we haven't spoken in over a week. There's just a lot of pent-up emotions, I guess.
Yeah. Sorry. But anyway, back to this shit stain. So, regardless of where he was stationed, I'm going to go ahead and just say that he was stationed in Germany just because obviously he wasn't in Vietnam, but he was in the army. But anyway, that is where his drug addiction began.
Ooh, yay! Drugs!
Mm-hmm. So his drug of choice was crack cocaine, which is kind of interesting to me because this is a humongous guy. So that kind of kills all the stereotypes about people who use crack being super small and skinny. So don't believe those stereotypes. So his mother states, I think the worst thing that ever happened to him was the drugs. It's a sad, sad story. He had so much potential, which is just heartbreaking to me.
Yeah, but it makes you wonder, did he have potential?
Yeah, I mean, if he was like an above average student and all of that growing up, he probably had a good bit of potential.
I mean, maybe, but like also just doing drugs doesn't turn you into a murderer.
I mean, you're right.
I am very ashamed of this, but I once dated a guy who admitted to me, he's like, yeah, I've done crack and heroin and all those sorts of things before. And if I had the chance to do it again, totally would. He was an asshole, do not get me wrong, but he was not a murderer.
And that is good, because you are still here.
Yeah, thankfully. Oh, God. Okay. All the trauma. Continue.
So, skipping forward to the early 90s, there wasn't really much to be said about when he got out of the military. Information on this guy was kind of hit and miss, honestly. The information I did find on several sites was pretty much all the same, and it just went from 1973 to 1991. So I'm guessing in that time he was either discharged or went AWOL from the military, because obviously he's not in at this point in time. So Skipping forward to the early 90s, Metheny was able to keep a steady job as a forklift operator, which is a pretty decent job. It did pay well, but he was unable to afford a place to live because he spent all of his money on crack.
Surprise!
Yeah, so because of this, he found himself among the homeless population of Baltimore, Maryland.
Cute.
Yeah. Don't do drugs.
Really? So, I shouldn't go out and try it right now?
No. I mean, no, don't do it. Don't do it. It's not worth it. Okay.
Do drug dealers usually have a return policy?
Maybe you could speak to a manager?
I can go full Karen?
Yeah. Go get the haircut first.
Yeah. I do need a haircut, you guys. Quarantine has not been kind to me.
Okay, so Joe actually excelled at his job. All of his coworkers, supervisors, anyone who came in contact with him while he was at work described him as hardworking, well-spoken, and super dependable.
That's weird.
Right? So his coworkers were so fond of him, they actually gave him a nickname. This nickname was Tiny. Okay. Yeah.
Real original, guys.
Mm-hmm. And this nickname was extremely ironic because Joe stood over 6 foot tall and weighed nearly 500 pounds.
Yeah, but like how many Italian mafia movies do you see where there's some giant guy and they call him tiny? Like, can we get a little more creative, please?
No.
Apparently not. All right, continue.
So at some point, Joe actually got his shit together and found himself a home. And he also got married and had a son. So this is another one of those instances where her name's not anywhere. I don't blame her. I wouldn't want my name associated with this psychopath. So good on her for getting away. Upon finding out what kind of a monster Joe actually was, his wife took their son and fled. So Metheny would spend the remainder of his life before capture trying to track down a family who wanted absolutely nothing to do with him. Yeah. And
well, good on that mom.
Yeah, and he ended up leaving a trail of bodies behind him along the way.
Cute. Real casual.
Yeah. So in 1994, Joe murdered his first victim. She was a 39-year-old sex worker named Kathy Ann Magaziner. And I type this into Google, and that is how you pronounce her last name. Do not come for me. So Joe invited her to his home where they smoked crack and had sex. Joe ended up strangling Kathy with an extension cord and buried her bodies on the ground of his workplace. I just can't. The last place I would bury a body would be at my place of work.
Well, okay. You also work at a retail store in a mall. So what are you going to do? Dig up the ground at the mall.
Yeah, there's trees all over the place at the mall I work at. I could just dig up one of the trees, bury the body, put the tree back, you know? But I wouldn't do that.
Unless you already have and you're just trying to throw us off the trail.
Anyway, so...
Oh, okay, I get it. That's a purposeful throat clear. I get you.
Okay. So, 6 months after he buried Kathy's body, he ended up digging her up and removed her head. Oh. He put it in a shoebox and threw the shoebox in a nearby dumpster in hopes of making her body harder to identify. So, I mean, okay, but anyway.
So, you were more likely to not get caught with it in the ground.
Yeah, you took a big risk, first of all, going back to where you buried her body, exactly where you buried her body, and then digging it up.
And then throwing it in. Did he throw it in his works dumpster?
It said a nearby dumpster, and he worked at a factory, so I'm guessing it had to have been on work grounds, because...
Oh, for fuck's sake. Okay. Yeah. But, yeah, but this guy had real potential. He was real smart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, during Joe's rage-filled search for his family, he stumbled upon two homeless men who he believed often smoked crack with his wife. So, he ended up butchering Randall Brewer and Randy Piker with an axe in Tent City under the Hanover Street Bridge in Baltimore, Maryland. He was actually acquitted of this because of lack of evidence.
Mm-hmm, of course he was.
Yeah. So he stated the following when asked about these murders. This guy's language is super freaking colorful, so brace yourself.
Yay!
My murder rampage started out as revenge, but ended up as passion for the taste of blood and the overwhelming sense of power one gets from taking the life of another human. I went looking for my wife and son under the bridge. They were not there, but the two homeless motherfuckers she got high with were. They were passed out on a stinking mattress, and that's where they were when I left, except they were dead from being chopped up.
Firstly, yeah. Why are you looking for your wife and kid under a bridge? What are they, trolls?
Well, his wife was also a crack addict, so,
I mean, yeah, but why would your kid be there?
Well,
I mean, I guess crack addicts don't exactly have the best.
They don't have childcare.
Yeah. So. Oh, okay. I just hate the whole thing. Continue.
So I guess Tent City didn't have a daycare, so she had to take them with her. Anyway. So the lack of evidence actually came from a lack of DNA on the murder weapon. This is more likely because the murder weapon was stolen by a man named Larry Amos and then used to murder another homeless man. Amos was actually charged with manslaughter, and then he was released 1 year and 9 months after being sentenced.
Why does that name sound familiar? Did he go on to be a serial killer?
I did look into that, and there is someone with the last name of Amos who went and became a serial killer. They didn't call him Larry, so I couldn't find anything else after this. I actually found that he died of a drug overdose not long after this.
Okay.
So I'm guessing maybe someone stole drugs from him and he just got super pissed off and cut him up into pieces. So
got it. So I'm either thinking of the other Amos serial killer or I'm thinking of the cookies. Either way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So Joe began befriending sex workers. He would lure them to his home where he would get them high and then rape and beat them. So he would either strangle them or stab them and dismember their bodies. He would then store these bodies in a deep freezer. Joe said the following about these murders. And again, colorful language. Okay. So, he says, I lured the first crack whore down under that bridge. I got her high and was trying to get information out of her about my old lady's whereabouts. She acted like she didn't know, so I beat the hell out of her, raped her ass, and then I killed her. I put her in some bushes and went and lured the second bitch down there. I did the same to her as the last one, but I was about to throw her in the bushes with the other one when I noticed an old black man down by the river fishing, looking back up at me. I grabbed a steel pipe that was laying by the ground and ran him down and laid his head wide open. So I put the two girls and him in the river and weighed them down with rocks. He then stated that he ended up returning to the river. He found the bodies, took them home, and dismembered those as well.
This guy just really likes to return to the scene of the crime.
Yeah, this is a great guy.
Oh, the best. I want to date him.
Yeah. Does he have a brother, I wonder?
I mean, it sounds like he did.
Oh, right. I'll have to look into that.
Let's track him down.
Yeah. All right. So, in 1996, Joe killed Kimberly Lynn Spicer by attempting to rape her and then strangling her. She put up too much of a fight, so he ended up stabbing her in the neck, and then he let her bleed out. She succumbed to the same fate as the other victims, ending up being stored in the deep freezer. On December 8th, 1996, he attempted to kidnap Rita Kemper and then attempted to rape her. According to Rita, he shared his drugs with her and then snatched off her clothing and tried to pin her down. She was able to crawl from out underneath him, which this guy is huge, so good job on her. But he ended up grabbing her by the ankle, drug her body back towards him while telling her, I'm going to kill you, and then I'm going to put you with the other girls. She did end up getting away, and she was able to get to police. So this is when shit gets interesting. The same day, Metheny asked a friend to help him bury Kimberly Spicer's body, which he had kept hidden at his job for nearly a full month.
Jesus. So wait, my question, all of this is happening within a month of each other?
Yes. So
holy fuck, dude.
Yeah, he was busy. So how did nobody smell this body? Like, was it so cold that it kept it preserved? Because, I mean, this was early December in Baltimore, and I'm guessing it gets pretty cold there.
As far as what I've seen in TV shows, yes, Baltimore gets very, very cold.
But a full month? Like, where is your hiding place? Are you, like, the king of hide-and-seek? I mean, I need answers.
I mean, he did have a lot of potential.
There you go. And that's where he used it. Crack the case.
Yep, all right. Hide-and-seek. We did it. I will take my trophy. Thank you.
So, after assisting with the burial, the friend reported it to the police. He was later charged as an accessory for disposing of evidence. If you were going to report this to the police, why did you help bury the body?
I mean, no, I kind of get that.
I don't.
Well, think about it. This guy is fucking huge. What are you going to do? Look at him and be like, no. Well, now you know there's a body. Now he knows that you have a problem with it. He's going to kill you, too.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just a little extra spunky because I'm thinking the bigger they are, the harder they fall. And I think I would kick this guy's kneecaps backwards and haul ass. But that's just me.
Yeah, but he's also got a lot of fat on those kneecaps. He may not feel it.
Nah, I got this. I have faith in myself.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like if it were me, I might, out of fear, help and then immediately go to the police. Just because, like, yeah, no, I'm cool with it. I'm good with it. But, like, I'm also turning you in right after this, though.
Well, let's hope neither one of us ever have to make those decisions.
fingers crossed. Definitely don't want to do that. Seeing two dead bodies so far has been enough for me.
Yeah, same. I just don't want to, I don't want any more reason to need to see a therapist, so.
Yeah. Oh my god, girl, there are already so many.
Oh yeah, laundry list over here.
All right, let's get back to this horrifying asshole.
So, Joe was promptly arrested and almost immediately began to confess. And when I say immediately, I mean before he was making it even through the station doors, he started confessing.
What? A little bitch.
Mm-hmm, to be so damn big. Yeah, so this is where Joe informed the officers that he ended up grinding up, he ended up grinding up the body parts from his deep freezer. He mixed them with a concoction of other meats and made them into patties and served them to unsuspecting customers at his pop-up sandwich stand.
Oh my god, no. Where is Hugo, the health inspector from Bob's Burgers, when you need him?
So, this is what he ended up saying about his little sandwich stand.
No thanks, just skip it.
I gotta say it. I had to read it, so you have to hear it.
Great, thank you. My therapist, when I get one, will thank you as well.
Okay. So, he says, well said, I killed and butchered their bodies. I cut the meat up and I put it in some Tupperware bowls, and then I put it in the freezer. Over the next couple of weeks, on the weekends, I opened up my little pop-up pit beef stand. I had real roast beef and pork sandwiches, and why not? They were very good. The human body tastes very similar to pork. If you mix it together, no one can tell the difference. Everything was going pretty good until I ran out of my special meat. Oh, God. I will never... Not that I would before. Who stops at a roadside pop-up sandwich stand ran by someone who looks like this guy? Oh, no. Yeah, this whole case made me a little nauseous.
I'm definitely feeling nauseous. So, yeah. Thanks. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, it's working. So, Metheny opened this stand on weekends to rid himself of evidence by feeding his concoction to any and everyone who stopped by to try his murder meat. When his meat supply would begin to run low, he would just go to his freezer, grind up more, and make some fresh patties. So, Metheny's confession ends with a touch of morbid humor. So, the next time you're riding down the road and you happen to see an open pit beef stand that you've never seen before, make sure you think about my story before you take a bite of that sandwich, he wrote. Sometimes you never know who you may eating. Ha ha ha. Ugh! Yeah,
I don't know what I was planning on having for dinner tonight, but now I know it's not going to be a sandwich.
Well, I have pulled pork waiting in the refrigerator, and now I'm second guessing that.
Oh, gross. No. Yeah.
So after confessing, Metheny led investigators to Kathy Magaziner's body, beheaded body. He showed absolutely no remorse for his crimes. He told the jury at the end of his trial that he got a rush out of committing the murders. He said he had no real reason why, other than he just liked to do it. Which are the worst kind of criminals. No remorse, no nothing. So because of lack of evidence, of course, he was only convicted for the murders of Kathy and Kimberly. He was sentenced to death, but that was overturned in 2000 and was reduced to life without parole. So according to him, he killed about 13 people, including the people under the bridge, and just random people that he would kill when he needed meat for his sandwich stand. Yeah. So after sentencing, Metheny made a final statement to the court. And this is what he said. And this, if you didn't hate this motherfucker already, get ready.
I'm ready.
The words "I'm sorry" will never come out, for they will be a lie. I am more than willing to give up my life for what I have done, to have God judge me and send me to hell for all of eternity.
I mean, he's definitely an asshole, but, like, I almost appreciate that he didn't give some bullshit apology, because nothing pisses me off more than when serial killers who obviously aren't sorry are like, "I'm so sorry."
Yeah, and they want that whole sob story. Like, I'm really surprised that he didn't do that, because most of what he told about his life was just bullshit.
Yeah. But,
you know, at least he did one good thing. So in August...
Sorry, continue. Nope, go ahead.
In August of 2017, a prison guard found Metheny unconscious on the floor of his cell. He was pronounced dead a short while later. They're not sure what happened. At this time, he was significantly smaller than he was in the picture that I showed you. He had aged a little bit, and I'm sure all the crack didn't help. But he was about a third of the size at this point. So I'm not sure if he had a heart attack, if what happened. But he had
like undiagnosed diabetes or something, because that can cause a lot of weight loss depending on the type that you have.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about that too. So let me just mention what my sources were.
I have a quick question.
Yes.
Did he ever say what he planned to do to his wife and child when he found them?
From what I read, he didn't plan on hurting them. He wanted to know why she left, which I thought was pretty apparent. and he made several statements that he just wanted to watch his son grow. I don't think that would have changed either way, because he did commit his first murder before his wife left him. So I think he was already on that path, and whether they would have stayed, left, whatever, I think he still would have done what he did. And he would have just, like, drug his wife and kid along. So he never mentioned what he would have done. I think he might have killed his wife and kept his son. But
I think, yeah, I 100% see it going in the direction of he killed his wife because fuck her, apparently. Mm-hmm. And then brought his kid up to murder with him.
Yeah. Which is just probably saved the world a little bitty Metheny. Ugh. Yeah, so my sources were Murderpedia, All That's Interesting, True Crime Auction House, Wikipedia. True Crime Auction House is kind of interesting, so I believe I sent you a couple of pictures of things that I found on there. You can find an array of artwork, greeting cards, all kinds of fucked up shit signed by all your quote-unquote favorite criminals. So there's art drawn, there's pictures drawn by Metheny on there that actually aren't too bad. But there's also pictures on there drawn by BTK that are fucking terrible.
Yeah, Katie sent them to me. They are garbage. Like, at least with John Wayne Gacy, like, he had some Snow White ones that, not gonna lie, if I had $6,500 to drop on a painting, I would probably get. But, yeah, BTKs are nothing like that. They are garbage.
They're, like, terrible. They look like one of them looks like a really bad replica of, like, a Beavis and Butthead animation. It's pretty fucking bad. And then you can find, like, signed paperwork from Charles Manson that's going for, like, $7,000. There's paintings by various criminals. They're not all, like, serial killers or murderers. There's just, you know, random stuff on there. They also sell, like, bone jewelry and stuff like that. So True Crime Auction House is that website if you're interested in anything like that.
Ooh.
But yeah, that was the fucked up tale of Joe Metheny.
Well, thank you for that. So we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with a spooky story.
Yeah. Hey, Rebecca, guess what?
What?
I got my Heathen Hippo candle in the mail today.
Really? So did I.
Yeah, so I got the fireside scent, and it is literally my favorite thing in the world right now.
I got my white tea and fig scent, and same.
Yeah, they're amazing. Not to mention, our cute little logo looks so good on the front of this candle.
I 100% agree, and I don't know. I want to send one to everyone.
Same. They're super affordable. They're natural because they're made out of soy.
And because they're made out of soy and they're natural, they burn evenly. There's no lingering smoky smell. And they even use my favorite wood wicks.
Yeah, so that nice little crackle. Oh my goodness.
Especially with fireside, I imagine that would be so nice.
Yeah, it's literally like I'm sitting next to a campfire in my cramped little studio. It's perfect.
I love it. So, guys, if you want one, there are 9 fragrances, 5 customizable font options, or you can get some of their really fun standard label options. They have some Joe Exotic ones that are calling my name. So, if you want to buy some of these adorable, affordable candles, go to Heathen Hippo on Etsy.
And you can use our little code CTKPOD and save 10%.
Yeah, so literally not seeing any reason you shouldn't do that.
So head on over right now, like right now.
Right now, do it. And we're back. Fastest break ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully you guys like the little alert thing we're trying to give you so that you know, like, hey, ads are coming. Don't crash your car on the freeway while you're listening to us.
Yeah, make sure you give us some feedback on that. I promise we're listening. We're trying to make those little changes.
Yeah, we're trying to make the ads a little less abrupt so it's not like, oh my God, I'm gonna drive my car off the road. Because we do know a lot of you listen during your commute, at least, you know, when you're not working from home in quarantine. Okay, so Katie, are you ready to get spooky?
Yeah, it's super dark in here, so I'm debating on whether I should turn on a light, but I don't think I'm going to. Let's see how long I can last without turning on a light.
I don't think you should. There's actually an instance where some guy goes into pitch black, so you can
Oh,
kind of relate to him.
shit. Maybe I should light my candle. I'm scared.
Ooh, do it.
I don't think I have a lighter. So there goes that. Anyway, we'll just pretend.
Gosh darn it. All right. Sorry, Heathen Hippo fans. All right. So today we're going to talk about the Edinburgh Fault.
Oh, I don't think I've heard of this.
Oh, good. Yay. So the Edinburgh Vaults are also known as the Southbridge Vaults, and they're a series of chambers formed in the 19 arches of Southbridge in Scotland.
Okay.
I believe it was Scotland. Yeah, it was Scotland. Sorry, just my mind brain farted because I didn't actually write Scotland in my notes for some stupid reason. Okay. The South Bridge was the second in a series of 5 bridges built in the 18th century. Now, this bridge is arguably the most fascinating of them all.
Okay.
So, there is going to be a lot of history in this story, you guys, but I just didn't feel that I could do the story justice without it.
Yes, that's my favorite.
Yay! So, construction on this bridge began in 1785, and upon completion, its highest point stood 31 feet above the ground, with a foundation that went 22 feet beneath the bedrock.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, it spanned a chasm of 1,000 feet between two hills. Yeah, because if you're not familiar with Edinburgh, the whole town is basically just between hills.
Okay,
Yeah, so
sounds
there's like this
neat.
really deep valley and then a bunch of hills surrounding it, and there are 5 bridges completely like locking this town in.
Okay.
This bridge, in combination with the others, forced residents to essentially live on top of one another. Literally on top of one another. The bridges essentially prevented any outward expansion, and it just kind of locked them all into this tiny little circle. So, to circumvent this issue, houses were built as high as 14 stories. Which, like, today isn't that big of a deal. I mean, there are 14-story apartment complexes, but back in the 18th century?
I'm sorry, but my door just opened on its own and I nearly shit my pants. Oh my God.
No, thank you.
Oh God, okay, continue.
All right. Well, glad you're getting good and spooked, Katie.
Oh my God, my heart is racing right now.
How do you know I didn't just like text Stuart and say, "Hey, open the door randomly and scare the shit out of Katie"?
You're gonna get him punched in the face, so don't.
I mean, I definitely didn't do that since he still hasn't added me on Facebook, so that he can help me with surprising you. But you know, all the shade.
Yeah. Well, you know. He's a slacker. But anyway.
Anyway. So again, these houses were built as high as 14 stories, which in the 18th century is insane.
Yeah.
So the claustrophobia caused by this, in combination with the fear from and mistrust of the invading British, created a thick air of tension, which don't we just love it? Plus, you can't forget about all of the superstition that ran rampant during the 18th century.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of superstition, black cats, broken mirrors, all those fun things.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1788, 3 years after it began, construction was completed. It was decided that the eldest resident and wife of a respected judge should be the first person to cross this bridge. All fine and well. However, several days before the bridge's grand opening, which, can we just take a minute to laugh about the fact that they're having a grand opening about a bridge?
Right?
So, several days before the bridge's grand opening, she died.
Okay, that's bad. That's bad juju to begin with.
Just wait, it gets better.
Oh, gosh.
Or, as my tagline says, it gets worse. No worries, though. An agreement had been made, and it would be honored. There just needed to be some adjustments to the plan. To hold up this deal, she was carried across the bridge in her coffin.
Hold up. What?
Yep. Obviously, the superstitious locals were not down with this at all. Because
no.
Who wants a cursed fucking bridge?
Ugh.
There was essentially the world's first boycott, and it was over this bridge.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
I just had to add in here, boycott. The word boycott didn't actually exist until 1880, but you know, it fits. Yeah, when I research, I research. I don't know why I felt the need to look that up, but I did.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, so you're welcome. Fun fact. So anyways, no one would use this bridge because of the ghost lady and 18th century taxes at work, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So avoiding this bridge actually meant that people trying to get to one side of town had to do this absurd trek through the deep valley of what's known as Cowgate.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So they were really adamant about avoiding this, so much so that they'd go on a hike to get where they were going.
That is just... Okay. People were super, super hard-headed back then. Okay.
But, like, also, I don't think they were exactly wrong.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Yeah. I think I just crossed the bridge.
Yeah. Meanwhile, despite all of the superstition and the boycotting of the bridge, real estate alongside and atop the bridge was highly sought after. This land would actually sell for more than any other land in Europe at the time. Buildings began to cover all but one arch. To this day, only one arch of this super extravagant bridge they designed remains visible.
Oh my God.
That wasn't enough, though. To maximize space even further, they built enclosed spaces within the arches between the buildings. So there's no way to have any windows. There's no natural light coming in. It's just dark buildings.
Ugh, why?
You will soon see.
Oh, God.
These areas were originally used as workshops for the above business, and any vaults any vaults below ground level were used for storage.
Okay.
Now, unfortunately, because of the small budget when building the bridge, it had never actually been sealed against the weather.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so water began to leak into the vaults, forcing the businesses to vacate the areas.
Oh, my good. Can you imagine?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And it all goes downhill from here.
Great. Perfect.
Soon, these spaces became homes for the poorest residents of Edinburgh. As many as 10 people shared each tiny little airless room.
Oof.
Which, yeah, also keep in mind, there's no bathrooms in there.
Oh, shit.
Literally.
Okay, that was a good one.
I know, not planned at all, you guys. I'm so happy how that worked out. During the Irish potato famine of 1845 to 1847, thousands of Irish immigrated to Scotland. Many of these Irishmen became residents of these vaults. So, great. They avoided one tragedy just to fall right into another.
Yeah, great.
All residents were not so innocent, however. Due to the close proximity to a graveyard, as well as a hospital, many body snatchers were said to have made the vaults their home as well.
Ugh.
Yeah. And it gets better. Serial killers were actually said to have stored bodies in the vaults alongside these body snatchers. And they would all then sell these bodies to doctor surgeons who would use them for research.
Oh my God. So they're chilling in this dark-ass enclosed room with dead bodies.
Mm-hmm. And
thousands no people. Bathrooms. Ugh. Okay.
Yeah, it's real great.
Gross.
It's actually rumored that the infamous serial killers William Burke and William Hare skulked around the vaults in the 1820s, even killing some of their 17 victims there.
Ugh.
Yeah. And I don't actually know anything about those serial killers, and I didn't research into them for this because I think it could be fun to cover them later, so.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. Now, this area quickly became Edinburgh's red light district. Sex work, gambling, illicit pubs and brothels, and a black market thrived in the vaults. And as crime gripped the area, murder, rape, disease, and death became prevalent.
Of course.
Of course. Because what else would happen?
Right. Ugh.
With the lack of safeguarding against the elements and the insane amount of people, the vaults quickly became uninhabitable, even for, like, the most desperate people.
Well, I mean, duh.
Yeah, everybody eventually vacated, and then to prevent any further rehabilitation, the vaults were filled in with rubble and remained this way for over 100 years.
Okay.
Yeah, so people actually forgot about these vaults entirely, which is so insane to me.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a pretty big part of the history of that bridge, but okay.
Yeah, you know, whatever, it's fine. Totally forgotten. So these long-forgotten vaults were actually rediscovered in 1985 when a man named Nori Rowan discovered a section of medieval street beneath his bar.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Nori Rowan's actually famous for something in Scotland, and I thought I was going to remember it, but I don't. And yeah, so.
Ooh, but I like that name.
Right? It's a nice name. It has a good ring to it. So further excavation on his part eventually revealed the labyrinths that were the vaults. Now, according to several paranormal investigations, the Edinburgh vaults are reportedly one of the most haunted locations in the world.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. I mean, I could see why.
Yeah, I find it a little wild, though, because they say that, but it's so hard to find information on some of these hauntings. So I did my best.
I'm sure it's great.
Now, ghost tours that are offered have allowed us an up-close look at some of these spirits.
Ooh.
Many, right? But I also want to go.
Ooh, okay.
Just not alone.
Okay, well, I'm not signing up for that one. Continue.
Too bad, because when we get big, you're coming with me.
Oh, God. Okay.
We'll just make our boyfriends go first. It's fine.
Sounds good.
Sacrifice. Sorry, Luke's mom. I know you listen, but... okay. Many who've entered these vaults on the tours say that they've experienced cold gusts of air, heard voices, children crying, whimpering, and shuffling feet. and sensed an intangible presence.
I don't like any of that. Nope.
Me neither, and you're about to like it less. One of the more frightening spirits is known as Mr. Boots.
Okay. Is it a cat?
I wish, but no. He is said to be a dark, foreboding presence and an evil entity. He is believed to have murdered a woman and kept her body in his vault house.
Ugh.
Yeah. He supposedly becomes very angry during tours and will even attack anyone who sits in the spot he kept her body hidden.
What the fuck? No thanks.
Yeah, I'm really not a big fan of that at all.
Mm-mm.
So I think this next part's probably where he gets his name from. The most common reports of his presence are the sounds of heavy boots walking slowly around tourists.
Oh, nope. I hate that.
Right?
Ugh. Like,
why are you circling me? Get out. Go away.
Oh, gross. Okay.
Step into the light or the flames, whichever.
Just get away.
Yeah, so one woman said she saw him clearly and was told to get out of the vaults repeatedly.
Ugh. I've got chills, and I'm, like, sitting here with my shirt over my knees and my arms, like, holding myself because I am super freaked out right now.
Well, then I'm glad I'm doing a good job. So another ghost is said to be a well-to-do man donning a tall black hat and a beard. He's not quite as scary as Mr. Boots, but he's reported as a sinister presence.
Okay.
He's most frequently spotted leaning against a wall, arms crossed, grinning at people passing by.
Ew! Ew! I hate that! Ew!
Yeah, I hated it too. I didn't sleep the night I researched this. Plus, I posted a picture on Patreon, but as I was researching it, I made sure that the room was pitch black except for three candles I had lit and just my laptop screen. And Luke was sleeping, and I'm just like, I'm scared. I'm so scared.
Oh my God. That's almost worse than being encircled by heavy boot sounds. That is almost worse.
Yeah, because it's why is he smiling? What's he thinking? What does he want to do to me?
Ugh, gross. Hate that. Blech.
Yep. All right. This one's a little more happy.
Okay.
So in a room determined to belong to a cobbler based on the different tools they found there while excavating is a spirit believed to be an 18th century shoemaker. He's been described as a short, stout man wearing a white t-shirt and a long leather apron.
Oh.
Yeah, I just picture, I think it's Geppetto from Pinocchio.
That's what I was thinking too. Or Belle's dad from Beauty and the Beast.
Yes. Yes, I love Belle's dad. Oh. Hey, look, we kind of went on theme with Father's Day, I guess. Two fathers.
Damn. Okay, there we go. Not on purpose.
Yeah. So he also smiles as people pass, but feels like a far happier presence. Okay, Thank you.
I'll allow that.
Yes, we'll allow it. There is also the spirit of a young, blonde, curly-haired boy named Jack, who wanders the grounds, tugging on the hands and clothing of women on the tours.
Aww. That's really sad.
I know. It's awful, and it gets worse later when we talk about why children might have died in here.
Oh, no.
I mean, aside from the obvious.
Mm-hmm.
In 2003, BBC radio producer Debbie McPhail said she heard a voice on a recording during an interview. This voice had a heavy accent and was speaking Gaelic.
Okay.
Which, as of 2003, Gaelic is a very, people still speak it, but it's not very common.
Mm-hmm.
And no one she was interviewing with spoke Gaelic, at least not as their natural go-to.
Okay.
Yeah, so no one involved in the interview had responded to the voice, and she later asked them why no one had addressed the person, and no one recalled having heard it.
EVP.
Kinda, yeah. So upon having someone translate the spoken words, there was a very distinct get out.
Oh, or, hell no.
Or Go Away.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, wasn't a big fan of that one.
No.
No.
Ooh.
Are you okay?
Yeah, that's like the worst thing you can hear. Ew.
What are you doing over there right now?
I'm trying to comfort myself.
Okay, does that involve like rubbing your hands along your body or something?
Because yeah, like on my arms.
Okay, cool. Because I just heard that and I'm like, EVP?
No, don't even.
Oh, God. Okay. Yeah, you have to edit this one. Just wait until that giggle comes back.
Shut up.
All right. So one room in the vaults is believed to have been used as a sacred space for many years by local occult practitioners known as the Hellfire Club for a number of terrible rituals.
Ooh, Hellfire Club? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It was described as a depraved fraternity.
Oh, okay.
Which, like, I mean, honestly, aren't they all?
I was going to say, what makes them any different? But okay.
Rumors say that the room was even used by a local satanic sect. Mm-hmm. So these people supposedly sacrificed a woman on a mysterious square stone or possible altar in the center of the room after torturing her for days.
Ugh.
Now I'm going to open my water bottle right now and it's probably going to make a loud squeak. So,
okay.
Alrighty. All right, here's where we get to the part that I fucking hate it.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right. Another more gruesome detail that can be found would be the chimneys. Mm. All of the buildings had functioning fireplaces and chimneys, and the access to service these chimneys could only be gained through these vaults.
Mm-hmm.
As was the standard in 18th century Scotland, it was very common for the chimney sweeps to be children.
Oh, God.
Yeah. These children were able to be purchased for £1.50 for 7 years of labor.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so £1 then is worth approximately $81 today. Not that that even matters because it's ridiculous, but I was curious, so...
Yeah, that's $81.
Yep, 7 years. 7 years for $81. Not to mention the fact that they're fucking children, but, mm-hmm. You know.
Wow.
Yeah, so the business owner would employ these children to climb up into the small chimneys and clean them. But every once in a while, a kid would get stuck.
Mm.
Now, if this happened, the business owner had two options. They could be a somewhat decent human being and hire another child to go up into the chimney to try and help the first kid out. Or they could just light a fire and smoke the initial child to death.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing since they paid them so low to begin with, the latter was probably the more commonly used option.
Probably, but we'll never know because, you know, these kids weren't really documented or looked after and...
Oh my God.
We're not about to shove children up there now to go find out.
No.
Yeah, so that was just awful. And it gets worse! So, continuing with the long line of tragedies, at one point or another, I couldn't find a date, no matter how hard I looked, because I spent, like, a good half hour just searching for a fucking date on this, but 18th century. At one point or another, there was a fire that swept through the vaults. Many who didn't die from the flames passed from smoke inhalation, or the heat conducted by the stone walls. Because they were essentially trapped in an oven.
Ugh.
So many of those who were trapped were parents with small children.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So seeing the fate ahead, they cut the throats of their own children to save them from suffering.
Oh my God.
That part makes me cry. Psychics who have visited this particular section of the vaults swear that they saw hundreds of spirits just wandering the space they existed in just moments before they perished.
Well, I mean, duh.
Yeah, but it's awful. Ugh. Moving on. It is also believed that there is a poltergeist in one vault.
Yeah, I could definitely see that, but okay.
Yeah. So one tour guide has said they've experienced small stones or pebbles, as well as a coin being thrown at the back of their head.
Oh, okay. Friendly. All right.
Yeah, real cute. So one brave, or foolish, depending on how you look at it, man has actually stayed overnight in this vault.
Why?
Because I err on the side of him being very foolish.
Yeah.
That man's name is Joe Swash.
Swash. Okay, that's fun to say.
Yeah, I have no idea if that's how you actually pronounce it, but I'm going
with
it.
Sounds good. Yep, sounds great.
Doesn't it? Joe is the star of a show called Joe Swash Believes in Ghosts, a series that played on BBC Three.
Okay.
Yeah, which, like, what a name. I believe in ghosts. Now, on this overnight sleepover in the vault, Joe became overwhelmed with a sense of dread and foreboding as he swore he heard women's footsteps going up and down the halls just beyond this vault.
Ugh.
Keep in mind, it's pitch fucking black down there.
Ugh.
And all he has is one single flashlight.
No, pass.
Right? Hard pass. In the video, he actually has the light shining on, like, a back wall behind him, because they do have a video camera with, not infrared, but night vision.
Mm-hmm.
And the flash, like, I swear to God, the flashlight up against the wall, it just kept freaking me out. It looked like a head. Like, it looked like an illuminated head, and I was watching this at, I think it was 4 a.m, it was still dark. Luke's still sleeping, and I'm just alone, and oh my God, I was just waiting for something to jump out.
Yeah, pass. Ew.
Yeah, hard pass. Yeah, so he couldn't see anything beyond what his lone flashlight would illuminate for him, and miraculously, he managed to stay in the vaults for a total of 4 hours before finally giving into that flight instinct.
Yeah, I probably would have lasted 4 seconds, so that's great.
100%. I would have been like, nope, not even. No, I wouldn't have even lasted 4 seconds. Let's get real. I would have never agreed to spend an overnight by myself.
Yeah, hell no.
Because no one was in there with him. It was just him.
Mm-mm. No.
He did have a walkie-talkie to signal to the people, I guess, probably outside in a van. So he could be like, get me the fuck out of here.
Ugh.
Which he did do. So, upon watching over the footage, muffled voices and footsteps could be heard.
Oh, gross.
Yeah, these were not voices he heard well in the vault, so yikes.
Yeah, but what's more creepy, hearing them, like, live or hearing them, you know, like, listening back to it?
I don't know, because it's like listening back, you're like, wow, there was something in there with me. I had no idea they could have killed me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like it freaks me out a little bit more because the same thing could be happening right now.
Yeah, and you never know.
I mean, we might, because you might catch it on recording, Katie, but.
Okay. Let's stop that.
Those working on the project investigated a little deeper into those noises. They just checked with businesses above the vaults because, you know, sometimes noise could potentially travel. Mm-hmm. But all of them had actually been shut down for the evening and cleared out well before those noises had begun.
Of course.
Of course. So Joe has since said that the Edinburgh vaults were the absolute worst place he had ever been to. Surprise. Yeah. A TripAdvisor review on a ghost tour of the vault said, they only advertised 3 ghosts, but I felt 4. The cobbler, the child, the watcher, and the spirit of a good time.
Great.
Yeah, I loved that so much that I had to include it. So my sources obviously were TripAdvisor, as well as Historic UK, an article written by Amanda Bartlett at Iowa University, Travel Channel, weekinweird.com, a book called The Town Below the Ground, Edinburgh's Legendary Underground City by Jan Andrew Henderson, and Joe Swash Believes in Ghosts, which I found on YouTube in case any of you wanted to watch it yourself.
All right. Sounds great. Hated that story.
Yeah, you're like, I definitely don't want to watch it myself. Thanks. Yeah, no.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, it was. Oh, God. Okay. So, Katie, I know this is about to get real dark real fast. What chilled, thrilled, or killed you this week?
So, I ended up losing 3 puppies. They got really sick really quickly, and before I knew it, they were gone. So that's part of the reason we weren't able to record on Sunday. Just, I was completely out of it. And I also want to mention that Rebecca is like the greatest person.
Hardly.
I don't know what I would have done if I didn't have the outlet of being an emotional mess to you, even just through text message. I'm really not used to being able to release that on anyone. So I really, really, really appreciate that. It has made this whole process a little easier to deal with. So thank you very much for that.
Well, I'm just really happy that you felt like you could trust me and that I could be there. Plus, I'm really excited for you to get the thing that I sent you. It, according to tracking, should hopefully be there tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm excited. I've been refreshing that page since you sent me the information, but we won't talk about that. Also, I had a doctor's appointment on Tuesday. I've had a few different health issues going on for literally over 10 years. I tend to be one of those people that puts the health of other people before myself just because I am a caretaker by nature. So I finally got my ass in gear and went to the doctor. I didn't really get bad news, didn't really get great news. I did get put on some medication that I hate. I told Rebecca earlier that it is the devil.
Yeah, I got to listen to her take it, and all I heard was, that's fucking disgusting.
Yeah, so it's supposed to help with just different things. And let's just say when I take this medication, I have to take it with like half a bottle of Pepto-Bismol. If not, I feel like I am going to puke my guts out everywhere. So that's fun. I have noticed some differences, though. I have a little bit more energy. I don't get super freaking tired in the middle of the day. I've noticed some bad differences. The whole making me nauseous was one, and now I'm pretty sensitive to sunlight. But so far, the pros are outweighing the cons, so that's good.
I hope it stays that way, that the pros outweigh the cons, and that maybe hopefully your stomach will even out eventually.
Yeah, it does get a little. I've only been on it almost a week, so they did say I would notice differences within 24 hours, and I definitely did. I would take having nausea over being just overwhelmingly fatigued all day, every day.
Yeah. So
that's good. The only other thing that is gonna kill me is I was suggested to, with the medication they put me on so it could balance everything out correctly, they don't want me to eat more than 1,500 calories a day. You don't realize how little that is until you have to eat that little.
Yeah, been there. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been struggling with that. We did have a cookout today for Father's Day for my boyfriend's dad, and I definitely had a huge cheat day because I gorged myself with food, but I've been super good for the past week, and it normally doesn't last this long. It normally lasts like a day, so
yeah, I have like zero self-control. It's horrible, and my boyfriend is the worst enabler, so I get you.
Yeah, normally I don't. Normally after a day, I'm like, fuck it, I don't want to do this anymore, but I kind of just want to feel good again, so I'm trying. So what were your chills, kills, or thrills for this week?
I had the flu the week that everything happened with you, which is part two of why we couldn't record. I don't know if it was actually the flu, but it was a stomach bug, and I just felt miserable. The fact that it's also Father's Day is really hard for me. As I'm sure you guys have guessed, I don't really have a relationship with 99% of my family, and that includes my dad because he's just a real piece of shit who likes to make me feel bad about myself. And it's not even just that. Like, he's a full-fledged narcissist.
One of those.
Yeah. I've actually told Katie on several occasions that if I ever took a DNA test, one of those like 23andMe things, I wouldn't be surprised if it one day led to my dad's arrest for something horrible.
Mm-hmm. That's the greatest right there.
Yeah, he was just highly abusive. The family members that I do speak to, I love them, but I don't think they really understand how bad it was. So I'm really the black sheep in so many ways because nobody gets it. Yeah, so I don't really have a lot of people that I get to talk to about it, and I don't have a lot of family members that I'm close with, and I just lost my grandpa in January, and I was really close with him. Mm-hmm. Of course, with his passing, I started to remember things that the trauma from my childhood blocked out, where I regret that so much, because as an adult, I wasn't able to connect as deeply with him, so that's just making it really hard, too. But I would usually celebrate Father's Day with him and like go to IHOP and stuff like that. So this is the first year without that. And it's just really hard.
Yeah. I'm really, really sorry that you're dealing with that. I get the grandfather thing. I'm lucky enough to still have mine. I would be completely lost without mine. So I can only imagine how you feel. That's really heavy.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And thank you for letting me vent. And sorry, guys, this has been a really depressing one.
Yeah, but we're dealing with some shit, so.
Yeah, life isn't always happy, unfortunately. And for me, it's almost rarely happy.
Well, that's what we're here for. So we're going to change that.
Yay! And you guys are definitely, so on the brighter side of things, what has absolutely thrilled me this last week is we have so many supporters on Facebook. We have, like I mentioned earlier, 1,200 listens already. Mm-hmm. We have people on Instagram who are just like, when's your next episode? And we've actually been interacting with several other small podcasts that are true crime or paranormal based. And so we're working on planning some crossover episodes eventually once we get more of our back end like audio stuff figured out. So that is keeping me excited and looking towards the future and just happy. So that should be fun. And hopefully we can provide that for you guys soon.
Yeah, super soon. Also, if there are, speaking of all of that, if there are other like smaller, I guess you could say, podcasts like us out there that would love to do a crossover, don't be afraid to reach out to us. Rebecca and I are super, super friendly, both of us. We respond to messages we get sent fairly quickly. 9 times out of 10, it's Rebecca, but either way, hey, don't be afraid to reach out.
Don't look down on yourself for that, though, Katie. It's not your fault I never sleep.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah, so definitely please reach out. don't, however, reach out asking me to give you a 5-star review for not listening. We don't do reviews. We do not do review swaps. We want all of our reviews on iTunes to be completely true, legitimate.
That's definitely a thing that annoys the both of us. And even if you do ask us to listen to your podcast, it's okay to ask us, hey, you know, would you mind listening to an episode and then letting us know what you think or whatever? But don't, I'm not saying I wouldn't, but don't automatically expect us to give you a review, either good or bad. We do a lot for the podcast. Both of us do work full time. So don't get pissy if we don't review you right away. And we're not like that either. We don't expect everyone who listens to us to give us a review. So yeah, again, on the whole review swap, again, we do not do that. So please don't ask.
Yeah, I mean, if you want us to actually listen to an episode and review, it's one thing. But we have, I mean, me personally, I get people from a bunch of different groups being like, hey, go review my podcast and I'll review yours. Bitch, if I haven't listened to your podcast, I'm not going to leave you a review.
Yeah, I've actually left a group because I got a couple of messages just strictly saying, basically, do you remember, like, follow for follow used to be a thing? Now it's review for review. So I've left a group because of that. I just don't, you're cheating, you're trying to cheat your way to the top, quote unquote. And I don't really think that that's fair. Our reviews really mean a lot to us, so I don't want to stoop to that level, and I feel like other podcasts shouldn't either. It's just, it's aggravating. It shouldn't be a thing.
Not even that. I will feel so much more proud knowing that we made it on our own merit. So
yeah.
So why? I don't want to make it by cheating. But anyways, this has become a very podcast specific rant. Oh, I will say, so Katie, do you remember how we had our first 1-star review?
Yes.
I think that was me.
What?
No, so something that happens is, like, all of my technology is really outdated. So I was messing around on my iPad and I was trying to go over our reviews and my finger tapped either 1 or 2 stars and it's like, thanks for your review. And I was like, no, oh my God, no. So I switched it to a 5-star, which I know is kind of like the cheating we just said we didn't want to do, but I didn't want an accidental 1-star. So for one of you who was going to leave us a 5-star review, I guess just don't. I don't. Even it out. But please review us. It helps.
It definitely does help.
So yeah, but that 1-star review has now gone bye-bye. So
okay, good, because it really pissed me off.
Yeah, I know. So I think that was my fault. So sorry.
Okay. That makes me feel better.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has gone on quite a long time. So I think we should probably wrap up.
I agree.
All right, guys. So if you like what we do, or maybe even love what we do, which we hope you love what we do, you can find us on Twitter or Instagram at
CTKpod.
You can join us in our Facebook group, which is super duper fun. Everybody's really nice there at
CTKpodcast.
Yeah, you can even find us. We started a Patreon. I do a lot of posting on there of, like, behind the scenes and stuff. I'm going to get Katie to start doing that or sending me pictures so I can do it for her. Mm-hmm. And then we also post, like, little fun audio extras. So if Katie has a story to tell 1 week or I have a story to tell 1 week, you can hear that kind of stuff there. And we have a bunch of fun things planned going forward. So you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/CTKpod.
Mm-hmm. And you can continue to send us listener stories, just little notes about how much you love us. Those are super flattering. You can send those to chillsthrillsandkills@gmail.com.
Yes, and please do. We are so excited. We're actually recording our first listener episode today. So hopefully you guys enjoy it. We know we will.
Excited.
Yeah. All right. So I think that about does it. So we will see you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.